Welcome to the Worst of the Best podcast. You wanted the best. Well, they didn't freaking make it! So here's what you get.
Welcome to another episode of the Worst of the Best podcast. I'm your host, Ryan, and with me today, we have a very special guest, my best friend of 36 years, almost 37 years, Nathan. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Ryan?
I'm doing wonderful. You know, Nathan, I'm excited that you're on the show. I know you never listen to my podcast. You can barely stand the sound of my voice, but welcome to the show. Well, you know what's funny, folks, is I invited Nathan. You know, it'd be kind of fun if we did a podcast together. Yeah, no, podcasts are stupid. So that being said, Nathan, would you like to plug your podcast that you do now?
I do a podcast called The Natural Classroom. It's all about outdoor learning and joy of being in the outdoors, I suppose, and why that's good for us and what makes us human, being in the outdoors. That's pretty much it.
That's great. Yeah, I'll be sure to put that in our show notes. Check out Nathan's podcast, The Natural Classroom. You have a different guest to come on each week from different fields, I understand, like, are there different backgrounds of their expertise and professions and sharing their ideas. And you do a very good job hosting and conversating with these individuals, Nathan. I expect the same kind of professionalism from you today, if you don't mind. Now, I am excited to have you on the show, partly because I know you, so it's very easy to talk to you. And two, you are a Lord of the Rings fan / fanatic / nerd, which is fantastic. The topic today, of course, is called From Hobbiton to Mount Doom, Joyful Moments in the Lord of the Rings Trilogy. Mm. I love these films. I've seen them many times. But you love these films and have seen them many, many times. I'm going to be leaning a little bit on you. So before we get to your fandom, I'll just let listeners know, if you're listening to this episode for the first time, what we do on this show is we take a best of list. So now Nathan and I did not create this list. Together, we scoured the internet and curated from all these different top lists. And we put together some of the top joyful moments in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. There's many. There's absolutely many. You have, like, whatever, 20 hours of film. There's lots of great moments, lots of funny moments, lots of joyful moments. But we just put together 10 that we think people... I think every moment, Nathan, that people will see or hear on the show, they'll be, oh yeah, of course, oh yeah, I could see why that made the list. I'm sure people say, how come XYZ didn't make the list? Let us know via comments on YouTube.
Definitely say that.
Well, that's fine, and that's totally applicable. The reason why it's important that Nathan and I didn't make this list, because at the end of the episode, independent of each other, and we won't reveal this during our discussion, just a reminder to my co-hosts, don't reveal during the discussion, we are going to pick what we think is the least best or worst happy moment. It could be for a variety of reasons. It could be I didn't like the way it was filmed, or I didn't like the storyline or how it fit into the film, or it was too silly, whatever the reason. But it won't be stated what those reasons are or what your pick is, Nathan, till the very end when I say, Nathan, what's your worst pick and why? So that's how it works, folks. So if we curated the list personally, we would already have our worst pick in mind, so it can't work like that. We have to pick somebody else's list. So that's how that works. Okay, so this was taken from other people. This is their picks. We will pick our worst pick and why after the list is revealed. And what we've done here, especially if you're watching this on YouTube, Nathan, great work from my co-host. Oh, I also want to say my brother Jason, did I mention he's not here? The reason why he's not here again this episode is because he's on vacation right now. He's Skull Valley, Death Valley, Hot Valley, one of those valleys. He's out there hiking, and he's one with nature right now. He's in the natural classroom himself. He's with nature. He's having a great time hiking and camping, and he really enjoys doing that kind of stuff. So we wish him safe travels on his way back. He'll be home shortly, and he misses being on the show. So thank you, Nathan, for stepping up for that. But now, Nathan, what is your fandom in relationship to Lord of the Rings?
Maybe it was 99. I was taking classes at university to become a teacher. In one of the classes, one of the books that we had to read was The Hobbit. Strangely enough, up to that point, I had never even read The Hobbit.
You hadn't read The Hobbit? I find that surprising.
I hadn't read it completely. I think I had started it, but I hadn't actually finished the whole thing. And so I read it and I devoured it. It was just like...
When I was done reading, I didn't put it away. I didn't eat it. I just put it away when I was done. Continue.
Okay. So when I read it, I... I was just like, what is this? I don't know if I understood much around fantasy. I hadn't really explored it enough to, like, I had explored a few books with you actually long before Lord of the Rings.
The Dragonlance series.
Yeah. I never put any of this stuff together. I know my brother had read Lord of the Rings before I had.
Wow.
And really loved it. Yeah. But I was exploring the genre on my own. Then fast forward a little bit to the movies were coming out. And so I needed to read more than just simply The Hobbit. So mm-hmm. I took on Fellowship of the Ring. I made it my goal to have it done before the movies came out. I read the Fellowship, loved the Fellowship, watched the movie. Once the movies came out, I almost didn't want to keep reading the books because the movies were just so fantastic. There's so many parts to that movie that I fell in love with immediately. And I know some people didn't like it. That's an interesting side story there. I ran into quite a few people that at first didn't like the first movie and they were like, I don't know if this is going to catch on. I had never seen something so well put together. I've learned since to separate the two. So I keep the books and the movies separate from each other. It became immediate to me. It was not like a slowly over time. I just realized right away, I'm like, I love the books. I love the movies. And I'm never going to like have these issues between the two because they're so great independently. I kept on moving through that process of reading the books before the movie came out. And so I had read the entire book before Two Towers came out. And then again, Two Towers and Fellowship. It was such an epic journey on both sides of that, reading those books and going to the movies. I had seen the movies, I was telling you offline here, 12 times each in theaters. And then when Return of the King came out, I ended up going to the theaters, watching the first two, the extended editions, in theaters. I got the chance to go in theaters and watch The Fellowship extended edition, followed by The Two Towers extended edition, and then we watched the theatrical version of Return of the King, because that was the night of its release. It was this big thing, and I'm in love with these movies. They, for me, represent all the things that are good in the world, and I mean that from the production of the movies, like the people involved in the movies. And then when you think of Tolkien himself and what he stands for, I stand for a lot of the same things. It's an easy read for me. It's an easy watch.
Appreciate you sharing that, Nathan. Honestly, I was very similar with you. I mean, I didn't watch it as many times as you did in theaters, but for me, that was still a lot. What I did, which was like, I think it was 5 to 7 times per film.
Yeah.
Opening night for all three films. Bought the extended editions on DVD. That's the only version I watched. Now, of course, it's the only edition that you watch. I didn't see the extended in the theater, but that's fine. I love fantasy films, fantasy books. So this is right up my alley. I've always loved fantasy. Lord of the Rings, I read the books as well before seeing the movies. Same thing. I hadn't read the trilogy until the movies came out, but I had read The Hobbit. So yeah, I, of course, just became a fan of Peter Jackson, of course, Ian McKellen, Viggo Mortensen, and all the little Hobbitsons and everyone. I became fans of them as well and followed their careers after the films. And I can't believe these films already came out 20 years ago. My mind is blown by that, 20 plus years ago. Mm-hmm. I love that Return of the King won 11 Academy Awards. I was blown away by that and so happy for Peter. I think the idea for that was it was like honoring the whole trilogy at that point because it was nominated every year, or sorry, every release of the films were nominated, but it never won. I think they almost kind of waited for the final film. And yeah, these films, like the title, these films make me happy. And there's joyful moments, sad moments. I cry in every one of them. Not, you know, I'm sure you do too.
I cried doing these little clips that go with this.
Well, don't cry on the podcast. Come on now. We can't have that. Don't be such a baby. No, yeah. I even cried during the extra. It's the only film behind the scenes where I cried during the extra scenes. Like, it was part where they're saying goodbye to each other at the end of production. It's like, I got choked up because I felt like I was part of the production family. And so behind it was,
stuff.
Yeah. So great stuff. There'll never be a trilogy like this again. I say that. Maybe there will be. A couple rumor mills here. Apparently, there's a rumor now that Peter Jackson's in talks with Warner Brothers as we speak. I literally read this today to do a storyline for the Third Age regarding the early days of Aragorn and Gollum. Remember when Aragorn would search for Gollum? He did those adventures?
Yep.
There might be films about that.
Appendices.
Yeah. So there might be a film on that, those adventures of early Aragorn and Rivendell and all that stuff, which would be kind of cool, I think.
They won't bring Viggo Mortensen back for that, but they'll have
to. No, they'll have a younger, of course. They'll have to have a younger actor, of course. That's fine.
Aragorn.
Yeah. And that's totally fine. I'm one of those people where I don't care how many Batmans there are or Spider-Man actors they are, because to me, or the Joker or things like that, I'm not one of those people, meaning to me, it's the character that I like, mm-hmm. not the actor. Mm-hmm. A lot of people play Peter Pan, right? You know what I mean? Stage yeah. productions or Shakespeare yeah. or, you know, Hamlet. Book characters are like Hamlet to me. You're going to have different people playing this actor. They're going to add their little flavor and twist to it. So I'm that way. James Bond, same thing. Give me different actors. I don't care because I like the character. I like the story that the character's in. So Aragorn, yeah, you have to recast him for a younger actor. That's fine. But I love the yeah. character. Yeah.
I really loved what Viggo Mortensen brought to that character because...
Oh, of course, yeah.
He actually changed a couple of things from his perspective. This is part of what makes this movie so great. A, Peter Jackson's open to this, right? You have directors that often are like, nope, what it says in the scripts, that's the way it is. We don't give my actors a chance to give their parts. So because Peter Jackson gave that to Viggo Mortensen, he added things like the reluctant hero, the guy that reluctantly accepts that he's going to become the king. He doesn't want the fame. That's not necessarily in the books. In fact, in the books, it's a given that he's going to be king. Everyone knows it. It's just getting him there is kind of part of the journey, is getting him to Minas Tirith so that he accepts it. It's a little bit more already in the cards for him. Whereas in the movies, he has to accept it himself. You can tell he's struggling with that.
Hey, Nathan, you want to hear some trivia? Did you know that Aragorn broke his foot?
Sorry, that's the... For those who are watching this because they just love listening to us for some reason, that's like the longest running meme joke.
I guess everyone has to say the helmet kick. He broke his foot on the helmet.
I should have had that helmet kick scene just for that moment. But
we should do the top 10 broken foot scenes of Lord of the Rings. Right, so again, whether you're a fan of the films, I'm a huge, huge fan of the films, or if you're a nerd like Nathan, I think you're going to enjoy this. So again, thank you, Nathan, for curating these scenes. Our attempt will be to put them in order, chronological order. So this is not any kind of order other than chronological. That way we keep it fair. We don't show people our hand, so to speak, what we think is the worst scene. Keep in mind, guys, something that can be the worst can still be very good, meaning you have to kill a baby. You can't keep all 10 scenes. So if you, Peter Jackson, you were told by the movie company gods, sorry, Peter, you got to cut one of these scenes. That's one way of looking at which one do you kill? You have to pick one. It's the name of the game. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hear, I know Nathan, you won't do this, of course, but I don't want to hear any of our listeners go, but they're all great. Don't you dare. No. That's the name of this podcast. That's what you have to do. You have to get rid of something. That's the name of the game, or else this podcast doesn't exist.
So first scene, this is when Frodo meets Gandalf on the road. This was the opening scene for the theatrical edition. So the title scene shows Fellowship of the Ring. And they changed it later, but...
I must follow if I...
You're late.
A wizard is never late, Frodo Baggins. Nor is he early. He arrives precisely when he means to.
I love the leap. The leap into the cart.
It's wonderful to see you.
You didn't think I'd miss your Uncle Bilbo's best.
That musical cue kicks in and you just find yourself right away. You're in Hobbiton. You're in the Shire. And you feel cozy and warm. The music, that little pan flute or the... kicks in, I just love it. And at first, if you don't know the Gandalf character and you watch this for the first time, of course you think, oh boy, this is a grumpy old wizard who's scorning this hobbit. How dare you question a wizard's timing? And of course it's all part of his bluster. It's a fake bluster, and they laugh and hug each other. It's a wonderful moment.
When this scene plays, it's the first time you hear the Hobbiton theme, so it's the introduction of that particular theme, and it gets repeated throughout. I've played the Lord of the Rings video games. I've played the Lego Lord of the Rings video games. That scene gets kind of parodied or made fun of, but just revisited multiple times. It's such a iconic scene.
Yeah, I love it too, because right now, this is the calm before the storm. He's reading a book on a tree. It's peaceful. Who would not want to live in the Shire? That's the whole point. Everybody wants to live there. You just feel peace there. It's like a little heaven on earth, a little heaven on Middle Earth. It's just this peaceful little place. He's reading and they're going to have fireworks display. It's Uncle Bilbo's birthday. It's that little moment where even Gandalf kind of knows what's coming, but he allows them to feel some peace and happiness for one last time.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
What's the next one, Nate?
All right. The next scene is just titled Shortcut to Mushrooms. This is actually one of the titles of one of the chapters in The Fellowship of the Ring. The book has a title, yeah, chapter Shortcut to Mushrooms. They've played around with the storyline a little bit for this scene to work because, but in the books, they actually go to Farmer Maggot's place and they have a conversation with them and sends them on their way. And the scene that it sets up after this scene is from the books as well. But yeah, they just have a little bit of fun, introduce the characters, Merry and Pippin.
Frodo! Merry, it's Frodo Baggins!
Hello, Frodo!
Get off!
Frodo,
what's the meaning of this?
Hold it.
You've been in the Farmer Maggot's crop!
The sickle.
Get out of my field! You're the one that I want to get out of my
field! I don't know why he's so upset. There's only a couple of carrots.
And some cabbages.
And those three bags of potatoes that we left here last week. And then the mushrooms the week before.
Yes, Pippin. My point is, he's clearly overreacting. Run!
That was close.
Oh, I think I've broken something. Trust a brandy buck and a toque.
What?
That was just a detour. A shortcut. A shortcut to what?
Mushrooms.
So that's a nod to the title of the book, I presume, right? Because that's exactly what the title was.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is a fun little, obviously, it's light, it's comedic. Again, Sam and Frodo have ventured, they've left the Shire for the last time, as they see it, or possibly the last time, I should say. So they're off on their adventure together, not inviting the other two guys along. That's how they meet them. That's how they join forces together. Like, why would you leave without us type discussion? So it's a clever way to get them united, that the other two are up to their old shenanigans, stealing food from Farmer Maggots, which is legit pretty bad. This guy is growing food for his family. These two guys keep eating his crops. But that's the comedy. Oh, we didn't take much except for this, except for that, and except for this, except for that. And that's kind of their whole gag throughout the film, like, you know, second breakfast. And they throughout the film add a little bit of comedy, but of course, as the trilogy continues, we see how even they are, their lightness and their comedy is lessened as the conflict increases, as Mount Doom leers near. Like, you notice that, like, if they get separated themselves and they get mixed up into it. But however, their hearts remain pure throughout the trilogy. That's the whole idea of the hobbits. Their hearts are always pure. A fun little moment. It's the meeting of the four hobbits together. This is the start of their adventures. And a nod, like you said, to the books. I'd forgotten that. They literally say the chapter heading. So any nerd in the films would be like, that's the title of the chapter. Of course, there were people like that. So that was a total nod for the book people.
I really like this scene. It's, you don't really know who Merry and Pippin are, other than there's a previous scene when they're the two that are goofing around with the fireworks and Gandalf grabs them by the ears and makes them wash dishes afterwards. So you get a sense already that these two are a little bit of the goofballs. But I love that they get that shot of Pippin. He's like, oh, he's probably mad at us because of this thing that they, and those potatoes that we lifted last week. Oh, and then there's the mushrooms. Oh, and then, like, he just lists off all this stuff. You're like, well, of course he'd be mad at you. You already get a sense that Pippin has this, he's very unaware of who he is or what he does. And then, of course, we get revisited about Pippin throughout the trilogy, where Gandalf definitely expresses his hatred of, not hatred, but he's frustrated with Pippin throughout the series. There's the scene later where Pippin knocks the bucket into the mine. The drums start pounding and he basically causes them to have to face all these orcs. And that,
they have a cave troll.
Yeah, that becomes this ongoing thing, is like Pippin doesn't really know what he's doing. And that's a very real thing when Pippin grabs the Palantir later in Return of the King. And he sees Sauron. Gandalf's line comes in there again, fool of a took, because he's just frustrated with Pippin. Anyway, you watch this scene here, and it's setting up a lot of that. This gives you a sense he's not totally aware of everything that he does, but you still like him. You still, you know, you're still kind of like, oh yeah, it's going to be funny. I love his little Scottish accent too, played by Billy Boyd.
Oh, good job.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, fun scene. All right, Nathan, what is the third happy moment from the trilogy?
Next happy moment is when Gandalf and Frodo and Sam are in Rivendell. So this is after they've been chased across by the Ringwraiths into Rivendell. Frodo's been injured. He's laying in the bed, and there's Sam, who comes to his side.
Frodo! Frodo!
Sam!
Bless you, you're awake!
Sam has hardly left your side.
We were that worried about you, weren't we, Mr. Gandalf?
By the skills of Lord Elrond, you're beginning to mend.
Welcome to Rivendell.
Mr. Anderson.
Frodo Baggins.
Yeah. There you go. So, yeah, that's, of course, a very happy moment, of course, where poor Sam thought he lost Mr. Frodo to the stabbing of the Ringwraith, but Steven Tyler's daughter saved him, so that's good.
So. Ian McKellen talks about, or telling Sean Astin, when he comes to see him, to grab his hand, to like make that intimate connection with him. It was him giving him that direction. And I think Sean Astin even talks about it afterwards, how much that made it more real to do that instead of just kind of running up and going, yeah, Frodo, you're awake, to grab his hand and make that connection. And I've seen people talk about like, well, they only said that because Ian McKellen's gay. And like, ugh.
Oh, I didn't even make that connection.
Yeah. And it's like,
Dumbledore's gay. That's who the gay wizard is. It's actually Dumbledore.
Yeah,
it's actually Dumbledore. He's the gay wizard, not Gandalf. Gandalf's the gay. Like, but he comes back gay instead of white. He comes back and goes, hello.
You're not the first person to make that connection.
Oh, really? Okay, you know what? I've never heard it before. I'm not saying it's like comedy gold, but I've never heard anyone do that before, for the record. So that's funny. I'm not surprised other people get Gandalf the gay.
Gandalf the white comes out of the closet.
Comes out of the closet. Aragorn, Legolas. All joking. Yes, Ian McKellen's gay in real life. The wizard's straight, but then Dumbledore is gay, but the actor's straight. Go figure. Okay.
Yeah. I like the intimacy of this scene. I think it's...
Yes. Well, they love each other. And I know people have made the gay comments, of course, even about the hobbits and Sam's. The love that he has for Frodo is a pure love. It's not a sexual love. It's a pure brother family love. He just loves and adores his best friend. It's like they're like brothers, more than brothers. It's a real bromance in that sense. It's like it's such a strong love that they have for each other. It's beautiful. It's actually a pure love, which I love.
Tolkien wrote Sam's character... as what's the term for it? I think it's actually I'm not sure if this is right, the right way of saying it, but there was in the military, you had under the officers, you had people who were there. I think they're called Batmen, and their job was to basically serve the officers. Their relationship in the military, especially World War One, was very, very close because they were like their assistant to the officers. And they did what the officers needed, and they had to be super loyal and super dependable, and they had to be able to pull off a lot of incredible feats. Tolkien wrote Sam's character based off of that role. I believe Tolkien was an officer.
Yeah, I think so. Yes, he was. Yes. Have you not seen the movie yet, Tolkien?
Oh, I've seen it, yeah. Okay. I know he was in the military. I just couldn't remember if he was an officer or not, and I believe he was. But
sure. That sounds right, though. I think he was. He definitely wrote about the war. That was the whole idea.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's lots of... Yeah,
yeah, of course. Machines and all that stuff. Yeah. Nature, yeah. Machines. Yeah. Okay. So what's the fourth scene, Nate? What have we got for the fourth scene?
So this next scene is when this is after the fellowship has been formed in Rivendell.
Right.
And they're on their way.
End of disc one. When they start walking away, that's the end of disc one. Yeah.
This is disc two. So this becomes their journey towards Moria. No, they're going to try and cross the Misty Mountains. And so they're up on their way over the mountains. Great scenery. Some of the scenery in this is just so fantastic. But this,
you know, it's filmed in New Zealand.
Oh, wow.
We should just give like the laziest trivia. Nathan, it was filmed in New Zealand.
Oh.
Yeah. Wow. And for the hobbits, they used midgets.
Well, speaking of that, Ryan, there's a scene about, I'm going to show you, which... You know,
I love it.
Good job of cutting between.
Yes. Adult actors and the little people. I love it. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Is it the wrestling scene?
Yes.
Okay. Let's go. Okay. So this is a midget wrestling with Boromir.
Good. Very good.
Move your feet.
Thanks.
Faster.
No, Gimli.
I would not take the road through Moria unless I had no other choice.
Well, which ends up being the case. I also want to say about Gimli as well. It's weird that he doesn't know about the state of his cousin at this point. I guess they don't correlate very often. It's like, yeah, he's going to give us a royal welcome to be a feast and dancing, and they're all dead. It's a very depressing moment.
Sorry. Get it.
All right, so there's actually an extended version of this scene. I didn't have time to put it together. So I only had time for the theatrical. Sorry, guys.
That's fine.
As I put this together and as I rewatched this, I realized that, like, oh, it does actually, it's a needed comic relief for what's about to come. We just left Rivendell, and now there's a moment of reality that needs to happen where they're relaxing, they're having fun. Boromir's training them how to fight. Yeah, it's very much needed for this particular scene because there's the Crebine, and then it's about to go over to Saruman in his pit. Oh, so you're going to take the pass of Caradhras? Well, I'll get you. It kind of like sets up the evil of that, and it's just a needed little respite.
Agreed. And more importantly, it showcases a little bit of my favorite and slash tragic character, Boromir. What I love about Boromir's character, of course, is he is the most human of the humans, meaning he struggles with all the things that you and I struggle with, the power of the ring, the weight of the world of his kingdom on his shoulders, and the conflict with his father and his brother and all this stuff. I feel bad for him in many ways because he's trying his best. And because he failed, not failed, but because he struggled. He struggled at points throughout the film. He was never bad. It was never malicious or anything like that. I think he's the most human character. He doesn't have any powers. He doesn't have the pure heart of the Hobbit. He's just the most human of us going through these troubling times. Him wrestling with the Hobbits is to indicate too, but he's also a good person. He's training the Hobbits. He's teaching them how to survive. Things are coming. You guys cannot be left defenseless. And of course, his great sacrifice at the end. I mean, that part there, it gets me every freaking time, you know, just the...
Oh, man. Yeah. Scene with him and Aragorn when he's like kind of writing himself off, and Aragorn kind of convinces him, no, you've died honorably here. And
then, of course, he recognizes him as the king. You know, it's all that full circle. Yeah, he's a beautiful character. I mean, wonderfully played. He's another character that, boy, yes, Sean Bean. Can another person ever play Boromir? Well, yes, because, again, I love the character. But, yes, again, Sean Bean's performance as Boromir is amazing. It's a very quick little moment, I agree. But I think, like we're saying here, I think it does a lot for the relationship he has for the Hobbits, the protection he has for them. And the ring corrupts all. Even Gandalf said that he dared not touch the ring for what it might do to him. So we know how powerful this ring is. So the fact that Boromir only did what he did is actually still a testament to his heart. He, you know, him trying to grab the ring from Frodo. It wasn't that he was going to hurt Frodo, but he wanted the ring. That's how powerful this ring is. That a mere human, like if Gandalf the Grey would dare not touch the ring, well, of course it's going to affect people like Boromir and others, right? It affected Frodo long haul, right? So it's just a powerful thing.
A lot of people have tried to push this particular narrative onto the rings, where it's Tolkien just reliving his Christianity through the film or through the books. He's trying to push that narrative. And people often point to Boromir as a Judas type character. And you can argue whether Tolkien actually did it or didn't, because Boromir does betray them in a way. But because of how much more human, and that's in the books too, by the way, it's not just the movies that do this. The books definitely bring Boromir out as he's a very noble character, but he has moments of weakness, and that's what ends up betraying him. It adds more depth to what a Judas character might be like. Everyone makes Judas out to be worst of all and the most low of all. And I don't know, I totally agree with you about Boromir. He's such a great character. The heart of this first movie is Boromir.
Yeah, it's his ultimate story arc and his ultimate sacrifice and his redemption before his death. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah,
in fact, I love him so much. It's like, spoiler alert, if you haven't watched Game of Thrones, I mean, Sean Bean, like, I know it's the joke, but Sean Bean dies in everything he does. That's kind of the joke. He's able to portray that kind of character, and then he plays a truly righteous, honor-born, integral character in Game of Thrones. So again, spoiler, this character gets killed at the end of season one, I think the second last episode of season one, and it shocks everyone who hasn't read the books, which I didn't read the books. But I get why his character was killed in Game of Thrones, because he was so pure and so good that he can't survive in this world, that anything that's good and pure is destroyed in the Game of Thrones world. Like, he was like that that last honorable kind of character beyond his children, right? Jon Snow was the next one. Anyways, that being said, I love it. I love his character and a great little moment. Okay, Nate, what's number five?
So just to set this one up, of course, Gandalf, and again, if people are watching this and they've never read the Lord of the Rings or watched the movies...
How much you get to really set up? Like just go watch the movies and come back and listen. Like, really?
Yeah.
Anyway,
if you haven't watched it, go watch it, come back. So Gandalf ends up dying, and it's one of the most tear-jerky moments in the movies when he dies. And it's mostly not because he dies, it's the reaction to him dying of the hobbits and everybody else that really gets me. But this is now we're in the Two Towers, and Gandalf meets part of the Fellowship. They've been out trying to track the hobbits, and then they end up running into Gandalf in the forest. Right before this, I didn't show the entire scene. I didn't put the whole clip in. But right before this, they do such a great job of combining Gandalf's voice and Saruman's voice when he first meets them. And that's right out of the books too. The confusion is, who is this? And then when it's revealed that it's Gandalf the White, it's quite a huge payoff, because at this point, everyone is assuming that Gandalf is gone.
Gandalf? Yes. That was what they used to call me. Gandalf the Grey. That was my name.
Gandalf.
I am Gandalf the White. And I come back to you now at the turn of the tide.
There's a little more to the scene beginning in, and I didn't want to put too much in here, especially in the extended editions. There's some great little lines that are added where Legolas gives some more information about Gandalf, and he's speaking in Elvish, and I don't want to get too much into that other than I love this scene. I think this scene is, because of how tragic the Gandalf the Grey dying scene is, and how much if you don't know the story, you're kind of like, man, Gandalf, like, he's like the most important character, and he's killed off in the first,
he's killed off before Boromir, if you don't know the storyline.
Yeah, because Gandalf, he comes back, there's some controversy, I should say, for George R. R. Martin, for example. He's said Gandalf should have just stayed dead.
What?
He's made that comment, and that's George R. R. Martin, if you think about his...
Why does he just shut his mouth and finish his book series before he dies?
Yes.
Is he going to get those done? He's not very healthy. He's going to die of a heart attack very soon. He better give those drafts over to a ghostwriter, because I don't know.
That's fine for George R. R. Martin, because that's the world that he has created. He's created a very much life sucks, get used to it. Yes.
It's like the 180 version of Lord of the Rings, in the sense of, like, he kills Aragorn in his books, essentially. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, you have hope? Well, let me see if I can make you not have hope anymore. Yeah. That to me is what the whole Game of Thrones is all about, is destroying hope. And Tolkien needs hope to exist. It's part of his philosophy. There has to be some, even if it's the tiniest amount of hope that things will work out, it still has to exist. He calls it the eucatastrophe, which is the payoff, or the, not really, some people minimize that to the happy ending, but it really is just the payoff later, that the hope matters and that it can lead to a great finale, in contrast to the Game of Thrones, the series, the TV series, which did not have that great of a finale. It was okay. I don't hate it. When you get to the finale for Lord of the Rings, there's so much of that kind of like, oh, yes, finally. That's really important.
I love the scene too, of course, him coming back as Gandalf the White, because his friends are like, holy smokes, you're not dead. Look at you. You're powerful now. And I'll say this much about Gandalf the White. This is probably my bit. I'd say it's a criticism, only because maybe I don't understand the, what do you call the godlike figures, Elendirs or something, what do you call them? Like,
well, there's the Maiar. Gandalf is a Maiar, as is Sauron and Saruman.
Right.
But then there's the Valar, the gods.
Okay, the godlike figure. This is where, if you want to talk about Christianity, of course, somebody dies and comes back and they're more powerful than ever. That's Gandalf the White. Of course, that's the Jesus figure. My only complaint, sort of, is I'm confused about what Gandalf can really, really do. How much does he do, and how much is he willing to let it happen? Because I feel like there's times where, like, I think you can do more than you're doing, but then it seems like he's in as much peril as Aragorn too at times. So I'm like, which one is it? How powerful are you? So I'm a little confused by his own powers and abilities. How much does he let happen with the world around him? And how much is he really like, holy crap, look what he's doing. Gandalf the Grey killed a Balrog. he went head to head with the Balrog, man. However you want to look, down to Chasm. I mean, he died eventually from the, he mortally still died during that battle, but he took on a Balrog. Mm-hmm. That's no joke. That was him as a gray. So now he's a white. Wouldn't he be able just to take on a Balrog no problem as a white? Am I confused by his powers or abilities? Or
no, I would say you're not confused, and we could argue for this for years.
Well, I know. I don't want to get too sidetracked, but
everybody has already argued this.
I know. I know.
White's power is limited because he's a Maiar, so he's limited to who and what he can battle, and so Balrogs are also Maiar.
Was he a Maiar before as a gray?
Yep.
Okay.
He's been basically given the power over Saruman. He's the head of the wizards now, of the Istari. He's the one that can now take charge of the wizards. So he has the same power that Saruman has. Saruman's difference is that Saruman studied a lot. So he's got a lot more knowledge and understanding of how things work. But as far as like who's in charge, it's now Gandalf the White.
I find it fascinating because I'm the average film goer who loves these films. As a film goer watching the movies, there's still a part of me is like, I get Boromir could be mortally killed, the hobbits can be killed, all these things, but then I'm a little confused about the elves a little bit. Like, obviously they could be killed with all the, you know, the two towers that were killed during that battle. Mm-hmm. But then Gandalf comes in, with his staff and light and everything, takes on Nazguls and stuff. I'm like, okay, so what are we, if we just had like five Gandalfs, could we take on the whole, like, at what point, why is there more Gandalf people running around? You know, anyways.
Another great thing of Tolkien's is that he keeps it in the realm of, they all have choice. Everyone within Lord of the Rings has that freedom to choose what they're going to do and how they're going to behave. So yeah, you could have like 25 Gandalfs, but do they choose to join forces and battle against?
And don't give me a start of Bombadil. What's he doing running around that forest banging Goldenberry, whatever her name is? What's his wife's name again?
Goldberry. Yeah.
It's Goldberry. Yeah, Goldberry. She's like this hot little woman. He's like freaking shagging her all day and while the whole world around is being destroyed. Like, this guy can single-handedly take on Sauron, can he?
This is a rabbit hole you don't go down. It's like so contentious.
No wonder he's so happy. He's got a hot wife in the garden. He's good to go. Nobody can touch him. He's living on tax-free land, this guy. All right. What's the next one, Nathan?
The next one is now Gandalf, as Gandalf the White, goes to Edoras, which is another human kingdom, the Horse Lords. And he comes in disguised as this old man. He basically rids Theoden of a curse that is on him and his household. It's a curse placed on him by Saruman. So Saruman has slowly poisoned Theoden, the king's mind, and has hold over him to essentially do whatever he wants him to do. That's the first thing that happens when Gandalf shows up. He reveals himself.
Like Jesus, he cures the leper. Like healing power.
You have no power here, Gandalf the Grey.
Oh no, I'm a different color. I love that.
I will draw you, Saruman, as poison is drawn from our wound.
I also love that the magic in this is not like...
If I go, Theoden dies. You did not kill me. You will not kill him. Rohan is mine. Be gone.
Cast out the evil spirits.
Great little,
yeah, the transition there. Yeah. Ooh, I got a headache now.
Yeah. Well, it's got blood leaking from his eyes. Love that little moment there, Miranda Otto. Here's about as magic as it gets. This transition back to
who he is.
I love that. There was no like, you know, aura going around him.
I know your face.
Well, how long was he under a curse for? That's a weird line that he says there. Like, I guess he's getting his memory back or something. Like, it seems like,
I know your face?
Yeah.
Okay, well, think about where that line comes up later.
Remind me.
When he dies.
Right.
So when he's got Spoiler. The horse sitting on top of him. Yeah, he dies later. He's got the horse on top of him, and she goes to him. It's such a touching moment because
yeah,
he didn't realize that she was there,
Right. Yeah, during the battle, of course. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and he says, I know your face. Then he says, I go now to the halls of my fathers in whose great company I'm well received, or whatever it is. It revisits that him coming to and realizing I'm the king again, and then him acknowledging that he's dying and that he's gonna go for being a good king, he's gonna go on. I love that line.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, this is a great moment, of course. There's nothing better than a good colonoscopy, right? Get that crap out of you. He looked disgusting. It's like, this is a very heavy Christian part, of course. He's possessed. Think of The Exorcist. That's the whole idea, the makeup. You're all like gross looking. You've got this evilness inside of you. It actually, because it comes inside of you, it actually shows on the outward appearance. It's not even his thoughts or his mind. He's got worm tongue, which is like the devil whispering in your ear of all this corruptness, and he's broken free from it. But the idea is that Theoden, before he became this way, he allowed a little bit to creep in, and then it overtook him. That's the idea. But now he's free of it. He's been cleansed. And but what I also love too, it's a little side note, that now he has his free will. They still have the arguments with Aragorn and Gandalf. There's still some arguments, which is good. Like, even though he's kind of free from that evilness, so to speak, doesn't mean he's agreeable about everything. He's still back to his old character, which I like. But he redeems himself at the end, of course. The big rousing speech he has with the troops is a big moment. The horses ride, the riders of Rohan going down the hill, and that music kicks in. Oh, it's a very touching moment. Oh, yeah. Okay. That's a powerful moment. These are quote-unquote happy moments. So this is a joyful moment, because the reason why this is a part of the list, we should also say, is because, yeah, the daughter and the father reunited. That's the whole idea.
It's his niece, but yeah.
Sorry, his niece. My apologies. They're reunited. She gets to see her uncle again in a way, the proper way again. So that's a joyful moment, of course. She all but had lost him, not to death, but he was alive, but now he's back. So another reuniting moment that Gandalf had, and now he has. Okay, what's the next one, Nathan?
So the next scene, we're going to skip over a lot, and this is going to be controversial because there's some good scenes in there between.
Oh, of course, so of course.
We're going right to one of the key scene, I would say, of the whole trilogy, which is when the ring is destroyed.
Give me your hand! Take my hand! Don't you let go!
Oh, Jack Aldrin.
Give me that bloody hand, would you?
Yeah.
Don't let go! Breathe!
And the big guy takes it off.
I
love that.
I just want to say, of course, all the conspiracy theorists came in here and said, did you see the dynamite inside the tower? That's how it fell. So, of course, everyone knows the scene in the movie, of course. All the bad guys get wiped out. You know, the main bad guy gets killed. So, of course, all the evil connection wipes out all the baddies in the process, keeps the good guys alive. And also it shows you how outnumbered they were. And it was a hopeless situation. And the scene that leads up to it right after is always really... it's funny how we're all excited and happy, but the characters below, so to speak, they're like, oh, Frodo did it. Oh, but look where they were. They must have been destroyed in that process. So I love that realization where they're so happy that the good guys won, but then they realize at the same time they've lost Frodo and Sam, as they think at that time as well. It's a combination of joy and pain at the same time. It's a happy moment. The ring's destroyed. Victory's availed.
This is the climax. This is the scene that you've been kind of waiting for. The whole movie is, will they actually pull this off? They do such a great job of really bringing it down to, will this actually happen? And this is right from the books. There's a whole scene with Gollum, and he's got the ring, and he's arguing with or fighting with Frodo, to the point where, like, he bites off the ring, and he's got the ring, and it's like, it's over. This is over. Now Gollum's got it. He's going to end up taking the ring, and this is all for naught. And, like, it just comes down to the wire, and it's well done. Well done in the books, well done in the movies. They tease that even further by putting Frodo over the edge, because that's actually not in the books, that Frodo is hanging and that Sam has to save him just before he falls. You definitely have that sense with Frodo, because Frodo kind of becomes a little of a, he betrays himself as well. He's betrayed by the ring, where he tries to take the ring and he can't let it go. He can't drop it. This just leads up to such an important part that this, yeah, this payoff of Sam rescuing him, of the thing exploding. This is a nerdy trivia thing. But when the tower falls, this is right after, and you even brought it up, this is right after 9/11, just a couple years afterwards. When they made this, they didn't want it to just be that the tower falls, because they thought that's a little too close to people's sensitivities, the world watching these towers get destroyed. So they added that explosion is the thing that wipes them out. I love that addition. I loved it in the movie. And then when I watched some of the behind the scenes and they talk about that, it just was like, oh, that's genius. It actually like is better with that. Had they just made the towers fall, it'd be like, oh, I really enjoyed that they did all that.
Agreed.
The ring's been destroyed, the battle's over, and everyone has reunited. There is this great reuniting scene where Frodo gets to see everybody, and they all see Frodo healed in Minas Tirith. But this is now where Aragorn is accepting becoming the king.
Now come the days of the king.
May they be blessed.
This day does not belong to one man, but to all. Let us together rebuild this world, that we may share in the days of peace.
Hanumne.
That's Elvis for How's It Hanging?
Peekaboo!
I've always had a passionate kiss. Daddy Elrond approves. All right, get to the hobbits already.
My friends. You bow to no one.
All the grown men are crying in the theater. All right. Yeah. Good stuff, Nathan. Good stuff, you blubbering boob. Why do you like that scene? Are you composed enough to talk about it?
Oh, we talked about the payoff from earlier when, like, you're kind of wondering whether this will end. But then getting to this scene is, like, the real payoff. This is the happiness on the other side of all of that lost hope. Everything about this scene is fantastic. Aragorn being crowned, his song in the middle there, Viggo Mortensen pulling off that song is so, I love the way that they did that with his singing and then them moving and then the slow motion of petals in the air and then seeing his Arwen and reuniting with her. I mean, in the books, I think that was already a given. It was already known she was going to be there, but the fact that they do that in the movie in such a great reveal, and then who doesn't get emotional with Aragorn's line there? I can't even talk about it without getting a little bit, tiny bit choked up. Him saying, it's when he says my friends, I always get emotional, because it's
of
just
course.
Like he's giving them the honor and not himself. Like, he's not going to take it himself. It just feels like so many people in this world, they seize opportunities to take the honor for themselves without giving it to the people that really deserved it.
The rain falls on the unjust and the just alike, Nathan. I know.
It's just so great. Yeah.
Obviously, beautiful scene. Not much to echo from what you said. I love that too, of course. They're equals. And not only are the equals, the whole kingdom bows to the hobbits. Without the hobbits sacrificing their journey to Mount Doom, they wouldn't be a kingdom to crown King Aragorn. So that's the whole point too, is to show that we wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for you guys. Out of small things come great things. That's the whole idea. And yeah, beautiful scene, beautiful moment. It's a happily ever after moment. That's essentially what this is. Okay.
So the next scene is when the hobbits arrive home. So they show up to Hobbiton. Yeah, it's a bittersweet
celebration.
Scene. It has a little bit of both humor and lightheartedness, but also, yeah.
So the hobbits have returned home.
We found ourselves looking upon a familiar sight. We were home.
I would just love it if out of nowhere Saruman comes, because this is what happened in the books. They had to battle for Hobbiton. I just love how in the books they had to battle for Hobbiton. Like, Saruman's yeah, like, you little bastards.
They don't come home to this in the books. They come home to, like, oh, again? We have to do this again?
I know their town was destroyed. There's dead hobbits everywhere. Their heads on spikes. We should say again for our listeners, the light moment there is that the hobbits are coming back. They have royal dress on. They have royal garb on. They've been honored by the King Aragorn. So they're wearing like royalty type outfits. What's interesting here is this little town in the movies has no idea of the dangers that have been. Their town has gone on. There's been no tweets, social media back to this town. And I think that's the idea here, is that they have no frame of mind. They just see the four hobbits come back and they're almost completely unaware of what's been avoided or diverted from their Hobbiton town, Shire.
Yeah.
Am I wrong about that? Or
no, you're right.
Okay. Who's this grumpy old man again's name? Who's this guy again?
Can't believe I forgot.
Tingleberry? Dingleberry? Is it Dingleberry? I think it's Mr. Dingleberry. So now they're in the bar, tavern. They all give each other cheers, clink their mugs, and have a drink. They have light smiles. This one barely makes the list to some degree. It is a joyful moment because the town is happy. They're always celebrating there. So they're not even celebrating, again, the destruction of Saruman. I don't even know how much they know. I really don't know. I think that's what we're led to believe, because the four hobbits, the four companions, they don't talk about what they've been through. They know. They're sitting at the table silently. There's no like, we did it. We've stopped the evil from coming over the Shire. They know. They cheers to each other that, hey, they are family and friends here, could continue to be happy and ignorant to what's around them because we stopped it from happening. And there's no need to tell them. I think it's sort of like a sad, happy moment. And at the same time, they kind of know they will never be the same because of what they've been through, but they're going to let the Shire continue to be its ignorant, happy self.
There's so many parts to this scene that for me are just, I know the books, okay? And I understand that in the books that they sure have to scour the Shire to finish it, because it's really them. They've saved, you know, Middle Earth, but have they saved the Shire? Until they get there, they realize they have to also save the Shire. And so they do. They could have still saved the Shire and then come back to this scene. The filmmakers decided to go with a different narrative where it's like nobody really even knows what they went through. And this is where people who are fans of the books will definitely disagree with me here. But I 100% think this choice to leave that out is far better because of what happens here. And this scene is why. People who've been through crazy stuff, whether you've been on a really big, and I've done some pretty awesome backpacking trips, things that only the people who've been there with me can actually sit down and we can talk about. I could talk about it till I'm blue in the face to other people and they wouldn't have a clue what I'm talking about because they weren't there. The filmmakers actually are relying on that shared experience here and the unspoken stuff. I love that they went with, instead of like, hey, remember that time when you almost died throwing the ring in there, Frodo? Yeah, that was crazy. If they had said any of that there, completely lost. The filmmakers decided to go with not saying anything, with just the music playing. Oh, it gets me every time. I start to get a little bit emotional on that one, just because it always feels like I get it. I get what that feels like. Just great experience and no one to really talk to about it with, and just be with the people that you shared it with, and you all know because you're all thinking the same thing.
All right, Nathan, last one.
This one is Sam marries Frodo, and it just comes right after.
Marries Frodo? Sorry. He is gay. I knew it.
What do you call the Freudian slip, they say? Yeah, okay.
Yep. Sam marries Rosie. All right.
So this scene pays off because throughout the book, you start with Sam not having the guts to say something to Rosie in the very beginning. He wasn't brave enough, right? Later, while they're having a conversation, like waiting for the Eagles to come pick them up, Sam reveals that he's imagining Rosie Cotton. He says, if I could have married anyone, it would have been her. He's pretty sure he's going to die. They're saying the things that they're like bucket list kind of thing. And then coming back here, of course, they're back there. Sam's got courage. He's a new person. So he goes, he approaches Rosie, and then they cut. I like that they just cut to that scene of, instead of like,
right.
And they went on some dates and then they, you know, got to know each other. And it's just years later or whatever, however much time that took, they got married.
It's wonderful that Frodo could be there, because again, if you haven't read the books or you didn't know what's coming, but you see Frodo's face, and this is why the movies are great for repeat viewings, because especially you don't know the stories, you wouldn't know why does Frodo look kind of happy, sad at the same time, because he knows this is the last happy moment he's going to have with Sam, because he knows he's going to go to, what do you call it again? The Dreamland or whatever it's called.
The Grey Havens.
The Grey Havens, that's right. Which is basically heaven, essentially. They go away forever, a paradise forever. But he has to say goodbye to Sam, which, of course, is one of the most heartbreaking. Maybe we'll do the most heartbreaking moments of this of the series. So that could be one of the saddest or the most cry-worthy moments, too. Because not all these kind of make you cry, necessarily. Some of them do. But there's the heartbreaking one, saying goodbye to Sam, of course. Death of Boromir. These are big moments. But this is a nice moment because it's like the pin in the cap. The true hero of the series, which we all know is Sam. Samwise is the hero. He's the one that carries Frodo with the ring to the mountain. He's the one that he's just the constant throughout the whole series. So he's the one with the least amount of potential, so to speak, from eavesdropping in the garden with Gandalf being pulled through the window to now being the guy that carries Frodo on the ring to Mount Doom. He's the true hero, but now we see him happily married. Like, this is it. He's got a family. And that's the next scene. So even though he says goodbye to Frodo later in the movie, we see him again with his family and kids, and this is his great adventure now, being a father and a husband. And we know that his paradise and his the rest of his life is wonderful. Like, Sam has a beautiful life with the kids and in the Shire. Like, come on, man. We all would love to have that life.
He ends up becoming mayor of Hobbiton.
That's right.
Over and over and over again. And then, spoiler, he goes to the Grey Havens eventually.
Good point. I forgot about that. That's right. Yeah. Was that in the appendices, that part? Or yeah. Yeah. That's not really a spoiler so much as we would hope and think so that, of course, Sam would be worthy of that reward himself. Yes. Okay. Well, Nathan, there you go. Now, again, we did not create the list. We scoured the internet, put together this list from all the different resources out there. So that's why we can't create the list, because, again, if we did, we would kind of automatically have a pick on our own by creating the list. So these are, but these are pretty good moments. I don't think anyone would argue any of these moments aren't happy or joyful, or these are those moments. But is there more? Yes, absolutely. You could probably do five different parts. But here's what we did for today of this list that we went through today. Which one for you is your worst pick and why? I'm now the producer. I'm the movie company person. Say, Peter Jackson, you're Peter Jackson. Mm-hmm. I love these movies. However, you have to get rid of one of these scenes, or we're never going to release this trilogy on the big screen. I'm sorry. That's the way it goes. Which one do you get rid of?
Holy crap. This is such a hard choice.
Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah. Because when I started this, I was already set on Sam seeing Frodo in,
sure.
in Aragorn in Rivendell. But then I rewatched it and I thought, okay, it's kind of important. Then when I go back, I've kind of done a full circle. I like started with that one. I know that one's pretty good. And then as I go through the other ones, I've already come back to that one. So that is the one actually that I'm going to go with. His
oh, which was that? Really,
Sam seeing Frodo in Rivendell. Okay, and I know that's going to be like kind of like.
So you're saying people, you to release these films, you got to cut that scene. Okay, so why? Why do you cut it?
It kind of needs it. That's all of these. I don't know if there's a way to really cut them. Without having people being like,
sure, but that's the world. I know, but that's the world we live in. I know it's the name of the game.
So with this, because it's at the bottom, this is, yeah, I think you could still have the story of Frodo waking up, seeing Gandalf, kind of figuring out what's happening. And then later you could have when he's reunited with the Hobbit, Sam saying that, and it doesn't lose too much. You do lose the intimacy of Sam and Frodo, but you get a lot of that throughout the movies already. Without Sam being with Frodo there, I know people would be like, why didn't you include that? But I have to make a cut. And so we just cut that little piece out. It's pretty short. It's pretty quick. It does add to the story, but not as much as the other ones. Not as important as the other scenes.
I don't disagree with you necessarily. I don't at all. For me, it's kind of an easy pick. I'll give you my second one, only because I guess I'd refilm it. I don't know why, but the exorcism scene kind of bugs me. It always has. I don't know why.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. Like, I understand the purpose of it. So that's why you can't cut it, because you have to see him cleansed of the of being possessed by Sauron. Was it Sauron or Saruman? I always get them. Sorry, Saruman. Yeah. So Saruman had possessed Theoden. I understand you got to show that release from his grip, so to speak. I don't know. I might have done it a little bit differently, but that's okay. That being said, this was sort of an easy pick for me overall. The whole them stealing food from the crops and Farmer Mega coming out with his little sickle and they stumble down the hill. The stumbling down the hill has been done so many times in films. I find that of all the things in a movie, such a trilogy, such as really, the Lord of the Rings is just one big, you know, 12-hour film, essentially. But the whole, like, oh, we bumped into each other and stumbled down a hill, and then I broke something, but it was a carrot. It's just, okay, are we watching Naked Gun here? It's just a little bit too much silliness, and I didn't break an arm. It was a carrot. And I don't know. It was cabbages we stole, and the potatoes. Blah, blah. It was a little bit too silly, and I get they have to establish that because it becomes more serious for the characters. But again, it's in the films. I don't mind it, but of these selections, that would be kind of an easy pick for me to say, you know what? They can just meet them on the road. They're out fishing even. They're just at a pond fishing. Like, you guys aren't going to leave without us. And they drop their rods in the water and off they go together. I would have been just as fine with that. I don't need to see them being bumbling and stumbling. The whole idea of them just rolling around, like one that could easily just broken their neck if that's the end of their journey. Anyways, there you go. That's it. That's my pick.
That scene, actually, when I think about it, there's the books are very different. Both Merry and Pippin know all about what Frodo and Sam are up to.
That's
and
right.
They're trying that's to find right. a way to join them.
I remember that now. Yes. Okay. Well, that's it, folks. That's how this podcast works. It's over. Nathan, before we leave, would you like to plug again where people can find your podcast?
Oh, yeah. Of course, you can find The Natural Classroom on Spotify and iHeartRadio. And
okay, let me help you. Podcast. Let me help you because I know you're new to podcasting. Ugh. Folks, just Google The Natural Classroom and it's available everywhere podcasts are sold. Apple, Spotify. Those are the big ones. Everything else, sure. But The Natural Classroom, and it's available on YouTube as well. You should just, it's available on YouTube.
It is true. Yes. Yeah. Some pretty big episodes coming up soon.
So there you go. I'm excited for you, Nathan. Good job on starting your own podcast. It's amazing. Glad you wanted to do that, not with me. So thank you so much. Remember, in front of every silver lining, there's a cloud. And today, for Nathan, it was
Sam meeting Frodo in Rivendell.
And then for Ryan, it was them stumbling and bumbling and breaking a carrot.